Good morning, everybody.
Greetings.
Just to let people know, like, you can kind of see this tiny little man in my background. That's CK, who many of you probably see commenting. He just stopped by to drop off some El Popo, because everyone knows how much I love Popo. So... Yes,
yeah, so we don't quite know what that is, but it's not the police in the jar.
It's an agave distilled spirit, 44% alcohol. That's really all I need to know.
Yeah, you got it.
we could just dive in and introduce ourselves and dig in.
Let's go for it.
I'm Mark Van Stinoke. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. Good morning, Robert, and whoever else is out there. So this is part two in our evil trilogy.
Yeah.
Trilogy of evil.
Speaking of the popo, we're talking about the problem of evil.
Yeah, and so we wanted to start out with a couple of nerdy things this morning. That might be fun to kind of kickstart us off. And some of this came off of the comments on Monday. Towards the end, a couple of people started talking about Satan. Mm-hmm. And so we thought it'd be fun to talk about, where does Satan come from?
Yes. That's my nice. Diabolical face.
That's very good. That's very well done.
I spent a lot of time being a lonely child looking at the mirror and playing with my face. So,
okay. Well, it's better than looking in the mirror and playing with something else.
No, but this idea, it's interesting to talk about, like, this idea of Satan. I mean, when you're talking about evil within... particularly Christianity, mm-hmm. demons and Satan comes up. Right. And it's a convoluted, like, most people don't really, in the popular imagination, we don't really know what to do with Satan. And it's just like, he's like a catch-all for everything that's evil. And then it's a way of taking, externalizing temptation and struggle.
Right.
Which I think is problematic. But
Yeah. So Satan is it's a great example of how, you know, Christianity, so many, particularly in the evangelical world, have this idea that, you know, Christianity is this pure, unique, brand new invention, never before seen anywhere, sort of like, you know,
pure revelation.
Brothers or something. Yes.
In heaven.
And it's actually just this giant syncretic mess, right? Because, you know, and we here in America, where America is, you know, big and number one, and so we think Christianity is big and Palestine and the Bible are big. And we don't really think about the fact that it's just this like tiny little peon colony kind of sitting in between all these gigantic empires that are much more impressive and, you know, more learned, more sophisticated, better architecture, I mean, all kinds of stuff, right? So you've got Egypt on the west, you've got Babylon, Assyria, Persia at different times on the east, you've got Greek and Rome across the Mediterranean on the north. And all of these empires have a tremendous impact on the religion that you find in the Bible. So most of these cultures have virgin birth stories, you know, the resurrection story was a mainstay in Egyptian religion. And Satan is the one Persian word in the Bible. And this appears in Job, And the Hasatan was actually the Persian court jester. And so this is very interesting because, and I think we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, this notion of the trickster in spirituality. And so so in many ways, the Hasatan was the Persian trickster, right? This is the person that can talk to the king and sort of mess with the king and challenge the king in ways that other people can't. And so really, the Book of Job is a Persian court scene. And so this figure then over time gets morphed into this fallen angel devil character. But that was not really the intention originally, right? The point originally was that, you know, this was somebody that was engaged in basically conversation about difficult and confusing topics. Right? Like, why do bad things happen to good people? But then it got very dualistic, shall we say.
Well, because there's those influences. And, you know, before mm-hmm. people, it's funny, you know, I understand this evangelical or just conservative tendency to want to make religion about purity, and therefore your religion has to be pure and untainted. Everything is syncretic. Like this yes. should be, that's the thing. It's like, okay, let's shift to another way of thinking. Lord of the Rings. If you're going to talk about holy writ when it comes to fantasy, you know, you think of Lord of the Rings as being incredibly original. Everything derives off of that. He's got a lot of offshoots. Well, he's pulling together all these influences to tell a story. And so that's, mm-hmm. if that's what the Bible is. Like we don't have to push away the fact that there's historical realities in there, there's material truths in there, there's deep wisdom, but they're also drawing upon all these influences to, in an imaginative way, to explain reality, and they're going off of influences. Just like today, like evangelicalism is incredibly syncretic with all sorts of influences that have nothing to do with the Bible, and it's not necessarily always bad. When that happens, like that's the thing. Like, it doesn't. Who cares right. if we move?
Except when it's yeah. Except when it's Christian rock, then it's pretty much always bad.
You need to shut your mouth, Daniel. I'm into some Petra. I saw Petra in concert like 5 years ago, way after I should. Should have done something. I went and saw it with Oren, because the lead singer Petra baptized Oren, so that's why we went and saw them in concert. Oh, it was amazing. It was in a high school auditorium, like a church's high school auditorium. Okay. Anyways, okay. I lost the train of thought.
so that was one kind of nerdy fact, right, about Satan not necessarily being this really separate thing from mm-hmm. all of reality. And then we were talking earlier about the other nerdy thing, which I think fits, which you can go ahead and share that since you brought
stuff.
Yeah about Jung.
Yeah, Carl Jung would like you know, this is the thing, like I have this love-hate relationship with Jung because some people like can take it in all sorts of woo-woo directions, but one of the things that I think is insightful is he looks at evil as being the shadow side of God. And where this gets interesting to me personally, mm-hmm. and how I think about things, like the desert where Jesus is tempted, is Jesus doing shadow work? Like, you can look at it that way. And so in here, if we're going to look at Satan as not just like the embodiment of all evil, but a trickster figure who might lead you astray towards mm-hmm. something unhelpful, you can see Satan tempting Jesus and playing with Jesus to cause him to go into a direction that might be satisfying in a lot of ways, but Jesus really has to deal with it. Like, what do I really want? Like, so in a way he's doing this really important work and he realizes, no, I'm not going to take this imperial path. I'm going to follow my vocation in this other way. That's the humble path. So in a weird way, Satan is doing Jesus a favor. and that's part of the biblical tradition too. Satan isn't always just unmitigated evil. There's a challenge there that can lead towards evil, but it can also be a way of you dealing with your shadow. And so this gets right. interesting. It complexifies how we understand the stuff inside of us.
Right. And so for those who are not Jungian folks, what is the shadow? What does that mean?
Okay, so the shadow, basically, and shadow isn't always bad either. So people talk about golden shadow. Right. It's like, so our society, not golden shower, golden shadow. So here's this idea. Like, we live in a society that has expectations on us. And we have all these like relationships where people have expectations on us. So if we don't conform perfectly to what is expected or what we expect from ourselves, we kind of push it away. We subordinate it. We shove it into our shadow. So the shadow is all the parts of you that you're not aware of.
Right.
It's been suppressed. And it can be good things. Like, some people like hold back their good, their amazingness because they don't want to stand out. And some people like are ashamed of their sexuality. That's a big one where they push sexual urges and impulses in their shadow. And so then it comes out in ways that are unintentional. So like a great way to notice your shadow or to start doing some work is if there's certain types of people that just always bug the crap out of you without you ever knowing much about them. That's an indicator that that's a projection of your from your shadow, like that there's some, they're actually revealing something up to yourself about you that you don't like, so you're just kind of blaming them for it. That's what we call projection. And so you start seeing this, and it becomes a helpful way of understanding like all sorts of evil things that human beings do is trying to externalize their internal struggle and kill it. Scapegoating. And you start in the like, I don't want to treat Jungian psychology as though it's sacred, but there's a key insight there.
Yeah, it's very, you know, it's very insightful. Yeah. So we've got a few comments. Why don't we go through those? And then I've got a good example that I want to share.
Yeah, and this goes back to the El Popo is eat the rich, drink the police. That's a t-shirt ready to be born into the world. It's going to have an image with it to help make sense. James says, good morning. Gregory asked, or says, I asked God, why do you allow so much misery, mayhem, and evil to go on in the world? And God replied, why do you?
Right.
Yep. I asked you first, God. Kathleen writes, good morning. I'm really late to joining you tonight.
That's okay. Good morning.
That's good to see you. Gregory writes, the Bible isn't reporting, it's testimony.
Yep.
And Gregory writes, the shadow is the acknowledged or unexplored, or what I call the dungeon self.
So, yeah, that's nice. Because the dungeon is lower. So I kind of like that. Again, this idea of Hades or hell, right? You know, that there's this stuff underneath that is not necessarily great, or we're not dealing with it. And then this comes out into the open. And you know, you mentioned sexuality, and this is a perfect example, right? You've got this enormous issue with pornography addiction within the pastorate and people acting out sexually within the pastorate. And so much of this has to do with the fact that, you know, Christianity is very negative and abusive towards sexuality. So all of that stuff gets pushed into the shadow side. And then you've got these pastors that are, you know, alone most of the day, unsupervised. They maybe are serving a small church. They don't have a lot of work to do. And, and suddenly they're on their computer looking at porn all day. And, then there's this horrible sort of explosion of problems, and they're fired in their life, and why are you doing this, right? And it really is just the shadow urges coming out because people are not dealing with that.
Connie's joining in live today.
Great. Hey, Connie. So one great example of all of this, and Gregory definitely relates to that set of questions you put up that somebody also put up on Monday. So just last week, there was the annual conference meeting of this Methodist conference in New England. And these three churches who have been involved in a very deep discernment process for 2 years, churches that are very queer friendly, have just really invited and welcomed in LGBTQIA folks into their congregation, have taken that very seriously. You know, we're very distressed when the Methodist Church did not change their book of discipline a couple years ago to include those folks. And, you know, they decided to disaffiliate. And, you know, this was a very faithful process. You know, I know a number of the people involved with this are really wonderful people and pastors. And, you know, they go to this annual conference meeting, which is pretty much, you know, dominated by a lot of progressive folks. And they just get creamed. I mean, they go through what was basically a 10-hour inquisition, having horrible things said about them, really, you know, personal attacks, degraded stuff, just terrible, terrible things. And it was this eruption of evil, right? I mean, it was just the way these people were treated, you know, was absolutely horrendous, right? Now, again, you know, so where does this come from? How do we understand this theologically? You know, is this just like the devil made me do it, you know, kind of thing? Or, you know, God is visiting evil upon this group of people. It's like, no, this is both individual and systemically, this is a manifestation of all of these shadow thoughts, feelings, undealt with material that this sort of event serves as a lightning rod for. And so suddenly, boom, you know, there's this massive attack. And it's horrible, right? And people barely even realize what they're doing. And so these kinds of things are much more, I think, helpful, but also accurate descriptions of where this thing we call evil is coming from.
You know, it gets really complex. So let's say I'm a person in that room and I'm feeling anxious because so much of my identity is tied up in being Methodist or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it's caught up in that is because I strive to like be a part of what I think is the right group of people, and that's driven by a desire to be pure. Like there's all sorts of motivations, but you're not, when you're upset, you're not like, it's not like you have a list of your deepest desires and like driving narratives sitting in front of you. What it comes out is like, it's, you feel threatened. And so you get anxious and angry. And then all that unreflected stuff from your shadow, your, you know, subconscious, like comes erupting and targeting out at people. And it's not always just, and this is where the social and the self kind of come together, because that anxiety is coming from stuff that's not just innate to you. It's also the stuff that's been put in you, and it's mixed together. And then, you know, this is where some Jungian folks will talk about how the, you know, in our shadows, we have complexes, which are constellations of points within our shadow. And that society also has social complexes, right, that mirror back in each other. Right. And so there's this anxiety vomiting around all the time. Like that's kind of, and so what evil is like, so one definition of evil, like we haven't really, I guess, defined how we're using the word evil necessarily, but to me it's when you cause harm or a system causes harm. Like personal evil would be I cause harm to others and I enjoy it. Societal evil is when some people are harmed by others for the benefit of other people. So oppression is what I would consider social evil. Right. And those things are interconnected.
Yeah.
And it's really messy. And so, like, the question is, does evil come out of our own brokenness, or does it come out of messed up systems? Well, yes.
Well, yeah.
It's a chicken, and it's a chicken and egg thing. Like, which causes which? Well, they both start causing each other. And so, mm-hmm. This is where you get someone like Philip Zimbardo, who did the Stanford Prison Experiment, who is drawing off the insights of Hannah Arendt about the banality of evil, saying evil really comes from complex systems that allow these shadow elements, they wouldn't use that term, but to kind of congeal. And so then all of a sudden you have people being scapegoated and punished for the benefit of other people, but it's so abstracted that individuals participate within it without being individually all that evil.
Right. Yeah, and this is, systems theory, and we talked a bunch in the fall when I was doing the systems class about this, right? So that, you know, these systems also have ways of dealing with undealt with emotionality, right? And people serve different roles within the systems. And what's funny is that even in the midst of this, 10-hour slugfest, there was somebody that said, apparently, this is like an alcoholic family, and when some people try to leave to be healthy, they get slaughtered and roped back in. But what was interesting was that they were almost saying that as if that was a good thing, right? They were trying to rope these people back in, and they didn't really even notice that they were making this systemic insight about where this evil was coming from. Right. And so, the more, and of course, the more that systems and individuals are under stress, mm-hmm. the more these things come out. Right. And so this, this propensity to defend, right, whatever it is, whether it's myself, whether it's my system. I mean, we're seeing this nationally in terms of whiteness, right? There's this massive desire right now to try to defend whiteness, right? So
without even knowing what whiteness is.
Yeah, right. And definitely not knowing what critical race theory is, right? Sure. And so all of these efforts, the system is under stress. And so at that point, individuals and the systems make a decision to disregard other people's humanity for the sake of saving themselves. And that's where evil then comes from.
It's funny, this again, the system versus individual, like this, it's almost funny if it weren't so catastrophically unhelpful. But this idea that there's this theory, critical race theory, that says, let's look at the ways in which white supremacy and the logic of white supremacy is embedded within our structures and laws and figure out what we can do to make a more equitable society. That's basically what critical race theory is getting at, right? And then the response is, hey, conservative lawmakers, let's make it illegal for people to make white children feel bad about being white.
Right.
And so you see this unreflective pivot from systemic critique to like this recognition that this is a... like this is somehow a personal attack because those things are confused to them. And then the other funny thing that people will say, and I've seen this from liberals, saying, why are these white people so upset? What are they afraid of? This doesn't threaten them. Well, the truth is it actually does.
It actually does, right?
Because you can't critique someone's entire framework for how they understand themselves in the world without their identity actually being threatened. Now, their identity should be threatened because whiteness is a shitty identity, like it's a toxic identity that needs to be undone. Does that make you a bad person, Dan? Well, no. And so far as you've internalized and recapitulate whiteness in the world, that's very problematic and bad. Mm-hmm. But it's not like your essence is white. Right. And this is, again, this gets the systemic. And so talking about evil, it gets really unhelpful. And you see this again happening across the political spectrum, where when a systemic injustice happens, it's very complicated. We want to somehow isolate it down to individual moral agents, individual human beings who are bad. So then you get these stupid decisions that happen. So like, okay, now everyone in the United States who doesn't like how Israel's treating Palestine is excited that Netanyahu's gone without really talking about how the guy who's replacing him could be just as bad or worse. Because we're locating, instead of the systemic reality, we're going to put it all onto an individual, which is called scapegoating, and punish that person, thinking we vanquished evil, But in so doing, we're actually helping re-entrench evil. Like this happens all the time in politics.
Over and over. All right, we got a bunch of comments. We should get to those.
Connie writes, I'm embarrassed by the evil that is being visited upon United Methodists by United Methodists.
Yeah, it is. It's embarrassing. Sad.
Gregory writes, the spiritual disciplines help us to become self-aware. Some things aren't to be expunged or expelled, but need to be harnessed, channeled, and directed toward cultivating health and wholeness. Amen.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, healing is important. You can't just excise our brokenness. You have to heal it. Michael writes, white supremacy is a feature of capitalism. Capitalism requires a permanent underclass to exploit. I mean, those two things really, they're locked in together. Gus writes, fuck Zimbardo. That whole study is bullshit. He was the most abusive person in that study. Well, that's the funny thing about that study. You're right. I think there's some insights that he's trying to explore, but he didn't prove them. He maybe proved that he's got his issues, which is about proving a point instead of testing a hypothesis. The reporters at You're Wrong About did a nice deep dive under the Stanford Prison Study.
Yeah, it's a very problematic study, and it's interesting. It's the kind of thing that in this day and age you could never get any study board to allow you to do it.
Well, and a lot of people have pointed out, like, you know, studies like this, or, you know, Lord of the Flies, you know, all these different narratives, like, don't prove human nature. Like, it exists a certain way. It does. What it does proves is that group of people doing the study, like, that there's structural issues there. Like, if you have British school children starting on an island in the Lord of Flies style, they might recapitulate the values of the British society, not necessarily human nature. So if you have a bunch of Papua New Guinean children who maybe have a different way of living, dropped an island, they might just keep doing what they've been doing. Like, you can't make extrapolations about the whole based upon. So the study does say some things. The Stanford Prison Experiment does tell us some things, but maybe just not what the researchers want us to take away. Gregory writes, white people intuitively and reflexively get that critical race theory is a threat to whiteness, which it is. Problem is, they're perfectly fine with whiteness.
Right. Yeah. And so that in many ways, and, you know, and this is talked about this some on Monday, you know, this is the Buddhist view of evil, right? That evil really arises out of confusion and attachment. And so if you are perfectly fine with whiteness and you are attached to that and you have formed and allied your whole identity with that and your neighborhood and your friends and, you know, all this stuff, consciously or unconsciously or both, and then something comes along that you sense is going to untangle this, that is a threat to your existence, right? And you are going to do evil things, right? Evil is going to arise. And this is one of the other things in, you know, the Buddhist observation of how phenomenon occurs, right? There's what is called a co-arising of phenomenon. And so that when you have attachment or confusion and then people act, that out of the attachment and confusion there appears at the same time this reaction, right? And so that it is that co-arising that creates the karmic flow of history and human society and our individual and collective selves. And that's what causes evil, right? That it, again, it's not some, you know, big sky daddy like doing something, you know, but that it really is this appearance of phenomenon based on clinging.
Gus writes, it also doesn't follow the scientific process. He moved the goalposts repeatedly, actually told the guards to be jerks, etc. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it doesn't show anything about what it does tell us is that someone in power can get a bunch of other people to do bad things to other people based upon them feeling like it's legitimized by the guy who has power. So like, is that, I mean, it's a useful study to look at about the ways that, you know, powerful white men can oppress people and make people their unwitting pawns. But that's not actually the point of the study.
Right.
but it is a takeaway of the story, and you see that acting out in the world. So, yeah, it's not very scientific. It's like, look at this guy be uses scientific research to exploit people to make a point, which I mean, we've got a lot of other examples of that too. Cheryl writes, you had been talking about sex and porn in the pastorate. Reading Rianne Eisler's Sacred Pleasure put things in order for me regarding sex. A part of being human made bad / evil. So far, I can get to a god of creation, but when it comes to radical evil, I just don't know. Radical evil for me is when horrible things are done to children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's as with any other human phenomenon, there is a continuum. And this is another interesting thing to me about how we view reality. This may seem like a little bit of a sidelight, but I think it's very relevant, right? That we tend to see everything in a very reductionistic cause and effect kind of way, but the truth is that reality is actually what's called stochastic, which means that it has a probability distribution for anything. So evil, I mean, there's some evil is worse than other evil. There's no question about that. And but that's to be expected of any phenomenon. And it seems pretty clear that, you know, once you have the development of the human ego, and this is the basic Garden of Eden, Cain and Abel story. Once you have the development of the human ego, you now have this capacity for evil action based on defense of your ego self in one way or another. And, you know, again, that can be very little. It can build up in systems and be really, really big and really, really bad. But I don't think that means that on a process level, it's somehow different. I think it just means that every behavior, every form exists on a distribution.
What's the word again?
Stochastic.
Stochastic. That sounds like a surfer term for something being really awesome.
Yeah, it's like, man, I just shredded that stochastic wave, dude.
Yeah, exactly where I was going with that. Yeah,
that's right. Okay, well, we're at time.
Yeah, we had a totally stochastic time today. that would be cringe, as my son would say. We'll be back on Friday, and I don't know how we're going to end. I mean, we'll have to somehow tie it into fascism. I don't know how we're going to tie this
obvious
category to fascism at all, though.
It's
hard.
It's hard. All right. Great to be with you all. Thanks for the comments, as always. Really appreciate all of you. Thanks, CK, for dropping in. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.